get to our next guest, this is a guy I wanted to have on the show one last time. Ladies and gentlemen, Bruxy Cady. No, it's not Foxy. It's Bruxy.
For now,
did you not know that, Michael? I thought you were a musician.
It's been a while.
Bruxy Cady, live on the phone from an undisclosed location or a bunker underneath a Baptist church near you. How are you, man?
Doing well. The witness protection program's working out splendidly.
Dude, I can't believe how many people hate you. It really is just, where are you going? Why are you...
She has to get out. Yeah, because okay.
We have interns that are changing things today, and I don't know what to do.
When they stay the same the whole time, changing anything.
Watch out for the dog. She's going to crawl over the dog. Hold on, Bruxy. We've got in studio problems. Just stand by.
We're good.
Yep.
We're good. She's good. Oh, okay. Nicely done,
Bruxy. Why don't people like? Why are they losing their minds over you?
Well, the best I can tell is that there's a strand of Christianity within a more reformed Calvinist tradition, but even then it's a more conservative version within that. It's a strand of Christianity within that strand of Christianity who have a understanding of the Christian faith that is kind of freeze-dried at one point of time in history. Some of them identify with a particular creed that was made at a certain time, like the London Baptist Confession of 1689, for instance. That would be one of them. And so everything that that particular creed says is exactly what God wants his church to believe, and to the extent you stray from agreeing with them, they think you are straying from Christianity, from Jesus, from being Christian. So for them, there's not a lot of wiggle room to say, hey, you're my brother, we love each other, but we have a significant disagreement. It is, you jump straight, pretty quickly anyway, into the category of you're a heretic, you're not a Christian. Therefore, all the rules of engagement between family members, like going face-to-face to talk about things, et cetera, just disappear. You're not a family member, you're an enemy. And so my job is just to warn the world about you if you don't agree about everything. At least there's certain issues that's the way they are on it.
But
and
they,
so I bumped up against some of these guys.
Yeah, but they – and I bumped up against him too. I posted the thing I said about you on the coming up on the show today. I said he's so into Jesus that some pastors are afraid of you or scared of you or something. And these guys – and let me just say these guys,
yeah,
these white I don't know if white has anything to do with it.
We made up a name for them today.
Oh, these thugologists.
There is a measure of intentional bullying. That's a fair thing to say.
Yeah, but you're a wimp though, Bruxy. You're a wimp because you don't want to you don't want to engage. You avoid them all. You avoid them all the time. You're avoiding them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's interesting. There's a. I think I've been a pastor and just a Christian long enough, and you would know this, Drew, you can get a sense pretty early on when someone is open to discussion and mutual learning and understanding, and when someone just wants to make a point.
And when someone is just pearls before swine.
Yes, and I think we passed that point with these guys a long time ago.
Wow. And I found myself getting, like, I want to... See, I'm no longer an evangelical, so I can hit people, right?
Evangelicals can hit people. You'd have to be an Anabaptist not to hit people.
Oh, sorry. That's what you guys are all about, you kumbaya thing. Yeah. What was that guy's name? Remember Todd Bentley, the evangelical preacher guy who kicked a lady in the chest because it was supposed to heal her?
Great moment.
What a meathead.
Christians are weird people.
How do you keep selling this stuff so that people actually sign up? Because it's easier to sell Amway, I think, these days than Jesus.
Yeah, you're right. Okay, Jesus. Jesus is the answer. He's the reason. If you shift the conversation away from the strange Christian religious subculture that has developed around Jesus, and you focus on Jesus, he becomes kind of this level playing field where you come together and realize that, wow, the church needs to actually start following this guy just as much as we would invite non-Christians to follow this guy. And so the Jesus focus breaks down the us versus them wall of division, the haves and the have-nots, because you realize that the haves, that is the people who claim to be Christian, are in as much need of instruction from Jesus on how to live as everybody else. And so I think that have a relentless focus on Jesus is actually the healthiest thing, both for Christians and non-Christians.
So it seems to me, Bruxy Cavey, teaching pastor. No, you're not teaching. You're the lead pastor. What is your thing? What's your thing over there?
You can call me teaching pastor or senior pastor.
Senior pastor. So you hang out with the seniors more these days at the meeting house.
That's right, pretty
of which,
much.
Of which there are seven. what am I trying to say? So in with the people who react against stuff like you, I see them into a couple of categories. One is those that are Christians living in the Old Testament and those that worship Paul more than Jesus. Do you know what I mean? Or am I
know what you're saying.
What am I not getting?
Some of this really arises quite naturally out of Protestantism. Remember, Protestantism, for all the good that it did, was a protest against the evils of the Catholic Church at the time. But we have to admit that in their DNA is a reactionary theology, a we're right, you're wrong. And Protestants did a good thing. They got the Bible into people's hands and said, you need to be reading more of the Bible, not just listening to the Pope, not just blindly listening to the traditions of the Church. Amen. So good. But then when they got the Bible into people's hands, Anabaptists, which is the tradition I am, came along and protested the Protestants and said, thank you for giving us the Bible, but now that we read it, we realize you guys aren't going far enough, because Christians aren't just people of the book. We're people of the person. That person is Jesus. So it's not just enough to read the Bible now. So great. It's a step up maybe from the abuses of the Catholic Church, the blind faith of listening to the traditions of the Church. But now that we're reading the Bible, we're realizing it's all about Jesus, and we've got to follow Jesus. And you Protestants aren't following, because the Protestants were just as violent as the Catholics. They were killing just as many heretics, going to war, the burning, drowning. They were doing all the violent stuff because they were able to say, well, it's in the Bible, because as long as it's in the book, it gets a pass, as opposed to seeing how the Bible points everybody toward Jesus, and Jesus teaches us how to live different. And I think there is that need even still within all forms of Christianity to say, it's not enough to say we read the Bible, love the Bible, follow the Bible. We've got to read the Bible, learn the Bible, memorize the Bible so we can follow Jesus.
What do you think of that, Tim?
I have actually come to the conclusion over a number of years that if Christ, I asked myself the question, is Christ sufficient? And if he is, then he said everything in the Old Testament is summed up in the two laws of love God, love your neighbor as yourself. And ultimately, to me, anything after the gospel is commentary. So that's Excuse where me. My mind is these days. That's where my heart is. That's where my spirituality is. I you know, if you want to call me a red letter guy, I don't know. But I just ask myself, if Christ's sufficient, then that's all I really need. I'm sure it's messed up, but that's all right.
When Jesus finished his time on earth, he left his disciples with this thing called the Great Commission, you know, go into all the world, make disciples. And it ends with him saying, and teaching them to obey everything I have commanded you. So he pulls it all about himself and says, the extent you stray from me, you're straying away from this movement that I'm starting. Now, I can read the rest here. I think you're right. The rest is commentary, but I can read the rest as helpful commentary and say, I can believe it's God-inspired commentary. The writings of the Apostle Paul are examples of Paul trying to help the early church follow Jesus. So I can read those stories, get involved in that narrative, and say, oh, this is really helpful for me to see how the first generation of Christ followers struggled to really follow Christ. But in the end, I've still got to go back and say, what did Christ himself teach?
We are on the line with Bruxy Cavey. He's the pastor guy at the Meeting House. He also wrote a book called The End of Religion. If you go to a website, www, which no one says anymore, tohellwithreligion.com, tohellwithreligion.com, that'll take you to my website. Joining us also in studio is Mr. Bennett. And Mr. Bennett, you've been hanging around enough in the Jesus scene with Jesus people over your lifetime, but you don't have the same smell as they do anymore. So, like, did you get out?
I did. It took me a long time, and I escaped with my faith just barely intact, and I still got it. And that's all there is to it. And I think, you know, I think the church must die. Whoa. I think you want to talk about this stuff, let's talk about resurrection. And then all the philosophy and all the stuff that goes on. And I can't help remembering that it might be better for you than to be have a stone tied to your leg and thrown in the river than make one of these little ones stumble. And that's what we do to each other.
I'm sorry, it's tied to the neck, okay? It's not the leg.
I'm a little rusty.
You know, I heard Richard Rohr the other day. I had to send him an email. I just am a huge fan of him. I heard him being interviewed by Oprah. And I actually sent an email to Oprah saying, look, you know, the show is just about over. It's probably too late, but I thought I would invite you on the show. And in my pitch to Oprah, I said, I've gone from despising you and you just being a standard joke in my vocabulary to realizing you were just further down the road than I was. And then she was interviewing Richard Rohr. And it's some of the best stuff. Someone said to me, why do you like this? Why do you like him so much? Because he's able to put words on the internal struggle that I've had for so long. But he still is able to reach out with one of his arms and touch home plate every once in a while, and it makes me feel safe. And what I mean by that is, you know, I need your help, man. Like, I really feel that we can learn from those who believe other things. And that's such an obvious thing. It's a moot thing in many ways. It's so obvious. But what lines do we draw?
Well, amen. Amen. Because it seems as though there's two factions. Well, there's one group that says we can learn from all and therefore treat all as absolutely equal and make sure you submit yourself to every religion, which is also a way of submitting yourself to no religion because you're the final arbiter of all things. And then there's the other camp that's so afraid of that, they say, no, commit to, say, Jesus within the Christian tradition and villainize everybody else. But I don't think it has to be an either or. I think it can be both and. In other words, I think the healthiest place, at least this has been my experience, is what I believe, the healthiest place to be in is to be firmly committed to one and then be open to friendship, learning, camaraderie with others. And I think it's very similar to marriage, in that in this life, if you have a fear of commitment, if you're constantly dating, you'll have a variety of beautiful experiences. But you can't date continually and also appreciate the beauty of a singularly focused romantic relationship with one person called marriage. So I think it's possible, but to get married, you don't have to villainize everyone else in the world either. You get married, and you can still have friendships, but you don't try and date everybody while you're married. You get married, you have one primary committed relationship you pour yourself into, you learn from, you grow together. But then you also learn from others, and you have other friendships, and that's beautiful. And I pray more and more people, specifically Christians, can do that. So I feel married to Jesus. I feel relationally fully committed, and there's no competition there. But from that place of security, I think Jesus walks with me. Well, I learn from all other traditions and find the beauty there.
So I'm lazy. Yeah. I'm just naturally lazy. It's a spiritual gift, I wonder if it is. I was born with it. I've been like that forever. And so I wonder what part... You all right there, Michael? Are you allergic to health food?
Cake.
Sorry, Mr. Bennett is gagging. I wonder what role my personality plays in me being a product of the culture also that I'm from. What role all that plays in me not wanting to commit to a religion.
Right.
And so I just interviewed a lovely lady on the phone here, Sarah Bowen. She wrote Spiritual Rebel, a positively addictive guide to finding deeper perspectives and higher purpose. It's a God-optional approach to spirituality that draws on ancient wisdom and modern pop culture. It's very interesting, very, very interesting. And it's perfect for those of us who have commitment problems to religion. And you know, are my commitment problems because of my personality? Are my commitment problems because of the culture I was raised in? Are my commitment problems because of the fact that I have a disdain for tribal conditioning?
Yeah, check D, all of the above.
Yeah.
I think on the one hand, you and I know that marriage is a lot of work. Parenting is a lot of work. Any family-oriented relationship is a lot of work. And there are just some people who have a hard time with the degree of work it takes. But I think the most laborious relationship we'll ever be in, it is also the most rewarding if we're willing to put in the work. And I feel the same thing with Jesus. That singular focus means you're pushing through times of boredom, you're pushing through times of frustration, but you're doing so because the reward is something that you can't find anywhere else. Having said that, you and I, those of us who've been in the church for any length of time, also know that there are people who take that sense of tribalism, that singularity of focus, to a kind of extreme that even subdivides within the tribe, so that you have, like we were talking about earlier, groups who, it's not just Jesus that unites us, but it's Jesus who divides us, because the way you talk, sometimes even just the words you use and the way you talk about Jesus are not the same words we use. And it can be so tiring and so exhausting that I think I know the temptation to say, I just don't want any part of any of this anymore. I'll just walk away over here in a corner and love Jesus privately, because every time I engage with the broader community, there can be so much pain there. But then I hang out with Jesus and he says, I want to build a family. I want to pull people together. And so I realize in this life, we're all finally looking for the silver bullet, the magic elixir that will just make it all easy. And I don't know that there is one. I'm committed to a lifetime of work for the good of the church, the body of Christ, in whatever configuration that is, with Jesus at the center. And I think it's going to be hard until the day I die. It's going to be great, too.
There's also a thing in our culture that I'm not sure if I can put the right words on this. When you say, I'm hanging out with the baseball guys every Wednesday after game, we go to the pub, and someone will say, oh, I hope Boston wins. And someone will go, are you nuts? What are you, a Boston fan? Oh, my goodness. Mm. And it's good ribbing, right? It's hilarious. It's sarcastic. Mm-hmm. It's just lighthearted, mm-hmm. right? But take that same kind of concept and put politics or religion into that. I'm a liberal. Oh, are you kidding? Yeah. You're a tree hugger? You're a blah, blah, blah. I say that to Tim fairly regularly.
Yep.
And then now go to the, okay, I'm, yeah, what do you believe in? Well, I'm not sure what I believe in. Acceptable. What do you believe in? Oh, I'm spiritual, but not religious. Acceptable. What do you believe in? I believe in all. Acceptable. What do you believe in? I'm a follower of Christ. Mm-hmm. There's a weird sociological response.
Yeah.
But you can also get away, again, when someone, although maybe not in Redneckville where I live, someone says, I'm a Buddhist. It's like, well, what do you like? Take out a lot, like I don't, you know what I mean? You smell the incense, like they'll make fun of you. But it's more acceptable to say I'm a Buddhist. But what is it?
Yeah.
What is it when people say I'm a Christian? Like I'm trying to analyze right now with you, Bruxy, on the phone.
Yeah.
Like let's just get down to this right now because we're near the end of the Drew Marshall show. So let's get this out on the airwaves.
Yeah, it is singularly not cool within our culture. We live within a time and place. Both it is the place we live in and the time period in history that has created this perfect storm. In the first century, it was hard for Christians because Christianity was an unknown faith. But in the 21st century, it's hard because it is a failed faith. Christianity has had 2,000 years of influence in the West. Yes, it has done some tremendous, wonderful things, produced great works of art, etc. But it has also shown that it can be just as violent, horrific as any other religion in the name, but this is what makes it worse, in the name of the Prince of Peace, the one who taught enemy love as the centerpiece of his ethic. And so we are living we're stewarding a 2,000-year-old legacy of failure. I understand that people would say, anything but that as their starting point for religious searching. It makes sense to me. And at the same time, I want to say, please see that as the failure of the church. This is a 2,000-year legacy of the church, not following the teaching of Jesus. This is not what following Jesus looks like. This is what not following Jesus looks like. Well, you claim to be following Jesus. Please come and join me in a new generation of people who actually do want to live out his teachings. And that takes a lot of courage to even take the time to parse out the difference between what the church versus actually following Jesus looks like. Not everyone is ready to do that work. I realize that.
Yeah, there's just too many other things to do.
Yeah. Yes. You know, the beautiful thing about Jesus, I'm convinced no one else does, you know, Kohlberg's moral reasoning theory or our hierarchy of human need is something that it puts something like self-actualization near the top. Self-actualization and self-transcendence. And self-actualization, actually becoming ourselves, I'm convinced nobody helps us do that like Jesus. There's this thing called the New Covenant, which is actually saying all religions around the world have operated by a list of rules, regulations, rituals, and routines that tell you how to live. I'm lifting that. I'm taking that away, and I'm going to put the Spirit of God in you, and I'm going to shape your own heart, and we're going to partner together to make internally motivated love choices. We're going to figure out case by case together what loving God and loving others looks like, and rather than just consulting the rule book. And I'll show you an example of that. I'll give you teaching about what that would look like. But in the end, my Spirit's going to help guide you. This is self-actualization. This is humanity finally having a chance to become itself, to be the people who make decisions by love rather than just submitting our conscience to a rule book of a religion. And I think only Jesus actually leads us through that path, coming through religion and out the other side with something superior. So I'm just convinced there's nothing like it.
Okay. So Jesus said this, and then some guy named Bruxy also said this to me once. It's not healthy for you to go out and just do this on your own. A community is a good thing. But yeah. I don't want community, man. And I really don't want the Jesus community. So what do I do?
Well, here's, by the way, I said Kohlberg earlier, and I meant Maslow. So just in case, you can save your cards and letters.
It's okay. I thought you said Colburn.
Okay. Yeah, it's the Bruce Colburn way of...
If I had a rocket launcher.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, in some, okay, we all, I think, hunger for some version of community, even if it's not the standardized version. So even if you will say, I'm not big on getting together with 30 people in a midweek Bible study and talking about our feelings, you will still say, but I do want to get together with one or two mates, hang out at the pub and process stuff.
Yep.
I need to have those wise friends that, or just loving friends, I don't care if they're wise, but who will hear me out and help me bounce ideas off of. So we're wired for relationship in some way. It's just that we define what that looks like. Introverts and extroverts and people of different stripes will define what that looks like differently. And so the church needs to find ways to help us all experience church in different wineskins, different styles. Jesus said, where two or three are gathered together, I'm there. So two or three mates at a pub hanging out, that's church.
Yeah, I think we use that as an excuse just to hang out at the pub, though.
Okay. That could also be true. But you know that spiritual discussion and processing, that's something that you can do in different configurations.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I see. Look, I have had the privilege of being able to do that every week for 16 years for 4 hours with a variety of incredible people. And after this is over, dude, I'm a little scared. Like, I'm okay living on the farm by myself with my wife and the dogs and riding the lawnmower. Like, that, I'm looking forward to that. I really am. Mm-hmm. But I also know myself enough to know that I'm going to be itching to have some discourse on things deeper with people I want to have discourse with. And the problem is finding those people.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I did that with you and Greg Paul and Paul Young and Gail Scott when my marriage went down the toilet, and you guys were my people. And I just said, well, instead of, I know the people I want to do this with, they don't live anywhere near me, so use technology to your advantage. We did Skype calls once a week.
Mm-hmm.
Is that okay?
Yeah.
Does that count?
Listen, yeah, it all counts. I mean, ultimately, even you would say, wouldn't this be good if when I need to get together and talk in person, these guys were closer. And so we all believe, I think, face-to-face is best, but being on the telephone is the next best thing. Being on Skype is the next. So it's fantastic that we can do that. The Apostle Paul would say when he would write letters, I wish I could be there in person, but I can't be, so I'm sending you this letter. Face-to-face is always better, but that doesn't mean that using the current technology, in his case, letter writing, isn't a great thing.
Yeah, but you want people to go to the meeting house.
Mm-hmm.
Do you not? Do you not want people to go to the meeting house? Do you not want them to put their arms around each other, sway, and sing Fog Machine Jesus songs?
No. But, yes, like I said, gathering together is always the place to start. If you can, do it. Getting together in person is a beautiful gift. But if you can't connect with the people that you need to connect with, technology is the next best thing. It can be true.
My problem is I know my problem, and I know that it's my problem. When it comes, see, I wouldn't mind hanging out. I was going to say hanging out at the, you know, going to church if it was at the meeting house. Well, okay. But I don't want to, I can't do the music stuff because it's corporate worship makes me, like a rash develops.
Sit at the back.
No, it doesn't matter where I am. It's just, So then listening to, why do you want to go? Well, listen to Brooks. I really enjoy Brooks. And so, but I can listen to you online. So then why go? Why even bother? Well, then it's about, you know, God wants you to be in a community. Well, I don't.
See, what's interesting is in your discussion so far, you haven't mentioned at any point what Jesus. You would come to contribute. Yeah, you haven't mentioned Jesus, that's true. But what you would come to contribute that rather than what you get out of it. It's what time are you going to arrive? What are you going to participate in only for what you would get out of it? And I say, if that's where you stop, you still haven't fully experienced what it's like to be in a family. See, guests in a home get to come and have dinner, and when dinner's over, they leave.
Yes.
Family members stick around and do the dishes.
Oh, no.
Right? But there's nothing, it's more work, but it's the payoff of being in family. And I have people who will say, I come and I volunteer, or I do this and that, and I meet the people I rub shoulders with, and the way I feel encouraged because I'm shoulder to shoulder with them rather than face to face, having a Bible study. But I'm working on a shared project, where we go out and work in compassion ministries, we volunteer here or there. The way I grow and develop and feel a sense of community that way is so good for me. So that's what I would want to just nudge you towards, to say, what can I come and do?
Yeah, but my doing, I don't want to do in the church. My doing gets done in community, not in the church. In other words, if I'm going to go and help some starving person, I'm going to help a starving person, not through the church. I'm just going to help a starving person. If I'm going to help a street person, I'm going to help a street person, not through the church. If I'm going to help a friend who is in need because the spouse died or, you know, whatever, hospital chaplaincy that I do, you know, that kind of stuff. And I'm not just using that as an excuse to not go to church. I just don't have any desire to do the community stuff, the good stuff, the serving, the other people focused stuff within church. I want to do that in life.
But does there have to be a counter distinction between the two?
Yes, because I don't have time to do both.
I disagree. So someone, because what church becomes then is it becomes the laboratory, the training ground, the going to the gym where we're exercising the muscles that we have to then go and help our neighbor move her piano. You know, it's that we go to the gym, we work on getting healthy so that we go out into the world and live better.
Okay, that's weird. Hold on. That's weird, man. I don't need help to go help a person move a piano. I just help a person move a piano. Why do I need to go to church to learn how to help a person move a piano? That makes no sense to me.
I'm suggesting
metaphor.
That it's... Yeah, it's a metaphor and it's both and. It's like you saying, well, I could just go and do whatever. I never have to go to the gym or I never have to go to school to learn anything. But I would say rather, or it's family members during their teen years where they need to differentiate, which is I think you are perpetually stuck in your spiritual teen years. where the differentiation from parents is the primary psychological drive at that time to say, I'm not just my parents, I'm different. But that teen then, that's why these are the times where teens say, I don't want to have family meals. I don't want to do chores around the house. I go out with my friends and I get all the sense of family I want. Usually, though, they progress through that and they realize family's unique, family's special. I can have friends and have family. I can be a productive member of society and a productive member of my family. And there's something about family, the people who you build relationship, consistent relationship with over time, who also have needs that you can serve, who are there for you then, in your times of crisis, and you can be there for them in their times of crisis. Yeah. I think it is a healthier way of being human.
But when family members are weird, hold on. When family members are weird, you go, oh, well, it's family, and that's not going to change. They're weird. Weird Uncle Drew, you know, whatever. It's still family. But to willingly sign up for a new family filled with weirdos, no, I don't want to.
Drew's worried because he doesn't want to be part of a club where he's a member, right? So
right. Well, thank you for playing the role of the persnickety teen. You're bang on with that, Drew. My family's weird. I'm embarrassed about them. I don't want to be a part of it. I need to differentiate from my parents. But in the end, that is actually one of the healthiest things for us, is not just to forever seek out the cool kids to hang out with, because that has its own level of low-grade anxiety. I have to be cool so that I get to hang out with the cool kids that I want to make my friends, rather than actually just learning to say, Weird people can be wonderful people. People with all kinds of social, the social misfits who don't fit in. I'm not going to run away from them. And there's a way. There's something that just clears away the anxiety by saying, yeah, this is my family. We're stuck with each other, the weird and the cool, the competent and socially incompetent. And we're going to hang out together and learn from one another.
Okay, now we got to talk. Oh, dude, we got to finish this, but hold on. What I mean is, like, there's different levels of weird. There's annoying weird, and then there's you can't help it weird.
Yeah.
And it's those that I think can actually help it and should be wiser to their weirdness, and then that drive me nuts. And then there's those, like I have said even very famously on when I was on Huntley Street that one time, that the sign of a good church are how many ugly people are in it. And what I mean by that is, are you filled with good-looking, socially aware, lovely human beings? Or do you have some street people, some developmentally challenged, some autistic, just so unaware, and they can't help it people? That's a sign of a good church. So I'm jiggy with that. Is that an okay word, jiggy? I don't even know if that's
2,000 years ago.
Okay.
I don't want to hang out with people who use the word jiggy. So
okay. You know what I mean? So it's the other ones who are raising their perpetual flag of whatever up the pole. I just go, oh, shut up. You're such a tribal leader. That's all you want to be is a tribal leader. Go away.
Yes.
Okay, I'm done.
Well, you sound like a follower of Jesus.
A teenager follower of Jesus, yes.
Yeah, but there's hope for you because you're pushing through the teen phase to say it's not about the cool kids. Like, when I was a teenager, I did wake up to this moment at church because I was a faithful churchgoer my whole life, and I realized, why is the general population here at church just a little weirder than the general population at high school or what I see on television or in the world around me? That's discouraging to me. And it took me some time to process and come out the other end because there is a season of life where we all hunger to be accepted by whatever is defined as cool, that group. But I was able to push through it and see that is actually something I'm proud of and I'm thankful for, that church is a place for the people who don't fit in. And so I hear that coming from you, and I think that's what gives me hope.
That's all I wanted. The last interview with Brexy Cavey, I just wanted him to have a little more hope about me. Oh, man. Well, you've been there for me in more ways than you would know. Some ways you do know, but in other ways you'd never know, and I'm not going to tell you. Thank you, Brexy, for, when I was pastoring in Australia, don't tell anybody, I heard about you. People would say to me, you will love this guy, man. He's your cup of tea. And I started listening to your stuff online and went, wow, okay, this is good. You know you're a good communicator. You also know you are socially inept.
Have great hair.
You have great hair. No, but sometimes you're weird and awkward like Bruce Coburn when it comes to one-on-one stuff. Hey, you know that about yourself. You're a bit of a freak show that way.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. Well, Drew, let me tell you that ditto doesn't quite capture it, but your commitment to actually just honestly turning your life inside out and sharing with a bold honesty, a transparency that I know there are things you will always keep private and to yourself that is not for the world to share, but you have gone beyond what is the standard norm to use yourself as kind of a living guinea pig in a way that you need to know for people like myself and many people within the church who are tempted to get it backwards and to think church is the place where I've got to make sure I put on the show and make sure I only have the positive testimony. You've continued to be the pushback to that in such a powerful way. I'm so grateful. I was just reflecting over the years that we've known each other and thought, I think without me intentionally coming to you and saying, hey, Drew, will you mentor me in bold honesty or whatever? You've just been doing that. You've been mentoring me, and I think countless people in ways that you may not realize. I am so grateful for these years.
I just looked over at Mr. Bennett, and he said, not me. You haven't been mentoring me at all. I'm going to actually hear that, and because my reaction is, I tend to deflect that and have an internal commentary that calls BS in what you just said instead of actually hearing it and letting it in. So thank you. Thank you for that.
Thank you, my friend.
It's very awkward right now. Goodbye.
I expect my phone will ring more frequently from the Drew Marshall number. And we can have that beer together and be church.
Yeah. I do want to actually promote the Meeting House. They have campuses all over the place. They're a big cult. And they, it really is a good place to go. It's a good place to go. Do I need to say they're not perfect? It just sounds silly to say that. They're not.
Look who's leading them. So we obviously, you know.
Yeah. No, but here's the thing. Okay, let me finish with this. I got to finish with something profound. I've been working on this.
Do you want some profound background music?
No. That'll mess it up. When I think about the difference between you and the people that tweeted against you after I posted that you were going to be on the show, and I think of the difference between you and those goofy guys?
Boneheads?
That's it. When I grow up, I want to be more like you.
Mm.
And that has to do with the way you respond to people that don't like you. I'm not there yet. Because I get protective about people that I think have a good heart and have been transformed by, if there is a God, this God has transformed you. Bruxy, I really think that's true.
Mm.
You stink of love. They don't. That's the difference.
Mm. Well, bless you. Well, I appreciate it. I'll receive that too, because
all right.
The fruit of the Spirit is, I mean, God, it's interesting. God wants to change Drew. He wants to change Bruxy. He wants to change all of us, and he hasn't kept it a secret as far as what he wants to change us into. The fruit of the Spirit is listed there. He wants to make us more loving people. So thanks for that affirmation.
Kumbaya, my Lord.
Kumbaya.
Take care, man. Take care. We'll see you soon enough, I hope.
I hope so, too. Okay. All right. Thanks
Bruxy. Bless you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye.
We had a guest go missing. That's why we went longer with Bruxy. I wasn't prepared for that much conversation. Can you tell I was running out of wisdom?
It was rich.
It was rich, was it?
Every chocolate chip drip moment.
I want to be like people that stink of love. And those Twitter guys, I don't like them.
Nope.
But it's their right. It's their responsibility to make sure that we all see how their theology is right and Bruxy's is wrong.
Yes.
That's why they follow Bruxy, the person they don't like, on Twitter. I always find that
funny. I just remember, you know, the Howard Stern film, the more you know, right-wing people listen to him than he had actual fans, because they're always looking for him to do something wrong so they could freak out.
Yeah, that helped increase his listenership.
Yep.